Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters. November is American Diabetes Month, a time to raise awareness and share important information about preventing and managing diabetes, a common condition that affects millions of Americans each year.
Joining us today is Kim Mayberry from Cookeville Regional Medical Center. She's here to help us better understand diabetes, clear up some common myths, and share ways our community can take steps towards better health.
Kim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. My name is Kim Mayberry. I'm a current employee of Cookeville Regional Medical Center. I'm one of the professional development nurse educators there at this time. I have had many roles there, been a nurse since 1995 and worked at Cookeville since 97. But one of my roles was as the director of the Diabetes Education Center for 6 years. And so while I was there, I was a certified diabetes care and education specialist, so a certification in that. And I also was board certified in advanced diabetes management during that time. So had a lot of good opportunity to meet a lot of people in the 14-county region, actually, and work with a lot of providers to help educate, support, and provide education to families as well as patients regarding their diabetes. So,
do you have a personal relationship with anybody that has had diabetes in your family, or did that? How did you get drawn into diabetes education? Because that's such a niche, you know.
Yeah, it really is, and I didn't have anybody in my immediate family or extended family that lived near me that had type 1 diabetes, but several family members with type 2 diabetes. It's not actually, fortunately, I guess, real strong in my family, though, as
That's
far
good,
as severity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was a critical care nurse for years. And when I got my master's in nursing education from Tennessee Tech,
wings up.
I was considering what I was going to do. You know, with that, you can educate students, you can educate staff. And you can educate patients. And so just so happened that, I don't know if you remember her, but Ms. Pam Hayes was the director for many years, started the diabetes education program. And I was fortunate enough to take that position from her and learn from her how to be a certified diabetes education specialist. So I was very fortunate and found out very quickly that there can be just as much excitement in helping people manage their diabetes as in working in the critical care units, which you may find surprising, but
true. I completely hear you, Kim.
Yeah.
Education is very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
It
yes.
doesn't matter if it's with a student or with a family member or a patient, or even a colleague.
Yes, absolutely.
It's nice.
Yes.
You've definitely worn many hats at Cookeville Regional Medical Center, but you know, November is American Diabetes Month, and we wanted to talk to you about diabetes. What's the goal of this national observance, and why do you think it's so important to bring awareness to diabetes?
Well, as you said in the beginning, in the introduction, millions of people just in the United States alone suffer from, have, try to manage prediabetes and diabetes. So it's estimated that about 88 million people have prediabetes, and a good number of them are not aware that they even have the condition, number one. So one reason to bring attention to it is to remind people that it's out there and that it's something you could be easily screened for and find. And you really want to do that because the complications of diabetes, which I'm sure we'll get into, are many. There are 34.2 million people diagnosed, that have diabetes, actually have either type 1 or type 2 diabetes, and about probably 10% of those probably are also unaware that they have diabetes. Yeah. So we really want to bring attention to the fact that it's very common in our country, and it's very preventable or manageable, sometimes preventable, and that you can live a long, healthy life with diabetes, if you get on top of it and manage it. So
get screened early.
Get screened early. That's exactly right. It's very important as far as the American Diabetes Association is concerned. You know, they discovered insulin in 1920, 21. Prior to that, people that lacked insulin died, so that's really in our recent history, years. And so now that we've had insulin, as you well know, diabetes testing, being able to check your blood sugar at home even has completely changed. The world has changed. Continuous glucose management has changed people's lives and enabled them to manage their diabetes in real time. Mm-hmm. Pumping insulin rather than injecting it several times a day changed people's lives. So we just want to make people aware of all these technologies and great advancements that are out there and how much easier it can be. It's never easy. Diabetes is a everyday, 24/7 chronic condition that people manage, but it can be done and people can be healthy. And there's a lot better ways to do that now than ever before.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Kim, for the listeners that may not know the difference, you mentioned type 1 and type 2. So, can you break that down in simple terms for the listeners, what the difference between those two are?
Yeah, so I'll do my best. Type 1 diabetes is a lesser common type as far as usually about 85 to 90% of people are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, but type 1 diabetes is usually diagnosed in the young, and it is an absolute lack of the production of insulin, which is the hormone that attaches to the cell and opens the door so that the sugar can go in. So when most people hear the word diabetes, they think of the word sugar, and they think, I shouldn't eat sugar, right? But the thing is, that lack of insulin is making the sugar build up in the bloodstream, and we need to be able to move that. So with type 1 diabetes, the average age of diagnosis is about 12 years old. And these people, their immune system has attacked their pancreas, or they've developed antibodies to the actual insulin itself. There's testing that can be done for this to diagnose this. And so if you're diagnosed with autoimmune diabetes, then you have type 1 diabetes. Anywhere from childhood up to age 30 is the average age of diagnosis of type 1 diabetes. But there is a slim chance that as an older person, you could be diagnosed with autoimmune diabetes, and that's called LADA, latent autoimmune diabetes of the adult. So if you're older than 30, you still could develop type 1. It's just a lot less common.
Okay.
Compared with type 2 diabetes, which is what most adults develop, a lot of people think that it comes from eating sugar or just being overweight, but that's not always the case. Many times it can be genetic. You can develop some insulin resistance from being overweight that you could change with some weight loss. But type 2 diabetes means that I still make some insulin. Mm-hmm. I just don't use it very well. My body my liver is putting out producing excess sugar, or my cells don't accept the insulin to open the door so the sugar can go in there and be used. So type 2 diabetes is not so much I don't make insulin, but I just don't process and store my sugar very well.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things, luckily, we can do to treat that. There is another type of diabetes that's not on here. That's the gestational diabetes, and I just bring it up because if you're a woman who has had a baby that weighs 9 pounds or more, you are at risk. You're at a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Or if you were diagnosed with gestational diabetes during your pregnancy, you are more at risk of developing type 2. It's not 100% that you're going to get it, but you should definitely be screening because your risk is higher.
Yeah. Great point. So you've also used the term pre-diabetes. So can you tell us a little bit about what that means?
Yeah. So prediabetes is a range where your sugars are a little bit higher than they should be. So, for instance, if you get your lab work done at your doctor's office or at a clinic and your fasting blood sugar, meaning that you just haven't been eating for several hours, is over 100, then when that triggers the A1C to be done, which is the longer-term measure of your blood sugar level, if your A1C falls between the normal of less than 5.7 up to the range of 6.4% for that 90-day average, you are in what we call the pre-diabetes range. So your average blood sugar would be falling less than 140. So if you're in that category, 100 to 140, then you're in the pre-diabetes range. And we know that's a very good time to start working on that and get that taken care of with the treatments. And it's very common. As you saw when we talked about the numbers, it basically doubles or even a little bit more, triples almost the number of people that have both type 1 and 2 combined.
Pre-diabetes,
yes.
I see a lot of patients.
Yeah, I'm sure.
A lot of older patients,
yes.
That are pre-diabetic. And that's good for you to mention that it's preventable at that point. And that is another point, we can reverse the process, hopefully, if we catch it early enough. So speaking of that, pre-diabetes, you know, people may not have symptoms. But what are some early warning signs that people should look for if they haven't been diagnosed? Like, what would some early things that people would experience possibly?
Yeah, so maybe I just notice that I'm more tired. Maybe I have some headaches. Maybe I'm a little sleepy after I eat. Maybe if I'm having early signs of type 1 diabetes where I'm lacking insulin, you know, I might be really hungry all the time, really thirsty all the time, and urinating a lot, going to the bathroom a lot. So hungry, thirsty, frequent urination kind of things. And you may also know because you may be slowly creeping up with your weight, your blood pressure is slightly going up, your nurse practitioner or your doctor tells you your cholesterol levels are getting bad, you know, those kinds of things. And so these are early signs that don't necessarily make you feel bad. And because of that, it's hard to make changes when I don't feel bad. It's hard to want to make changes.
Very true.
Yeah. So those are the main ones, I think.
All right. Well, I think we're going to hold there, and then we're going to come back with the next segment about some myths.
Welcome back to Local Matters, Health Matters. We're talking to Kim Mayberry from Cookeville Regional Medical Center about diabetes awareness during American Diabetes Month in November. Kim, there's a lot of information and misinformation out there about diabetes. So let's do a little myth versus truth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, Kim, is that we hear a lot from patients, especially if we talk about pre-diabetes. So clients will say, eating too much sugar is what causes diabetes.
All right. And so we know that's actually not true, that the things that cause diabetes are the risk factors that maybe we've mentioned a few but not mentioned all of them. But the fact is, as we get older, when we're older than 45, if you're male, so obviously I can't change either one of those things.
Nope.
But I can control things like exercising and my weight, and with a little help from my medicine, my blood pressure and my cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So those are all things that I can control. I can't control if I'm genetically predisposed or have a genetic mutation, or if something insults or harms my pancreas. I can't do anything about those things. But just the fact that I eat too much sugar, I might be born with a Cadillac pancreas, right? I could line up 10 people against the wall right there, line them up from smallest, lowest in weight to highest in weight, for example. And some of the people with the lowest weight would have diabetes, and some of the ones with the higher weight would not have diabetes. Yeah. And so there are a lot of controllable things, and there are some things that I can't change. But eating sugar can make my blood sugar worse, but it cannot give me or cause me to have diabetes.
That's good, because and when you mentioned the weight too, because you'll hear people say that as well. I've got diabetes because I'm overweight.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case. It is a pancreas and an insulin problem.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. So that brings me to a point real quick too, while we're talking about that, sometimes when people hear that other people are diagnosed with diabetes, or maybe I myself get diagnosed with diabetes, and people might sort of want to feel guilt or shame, or they might judge another person thinking that if they just do something about it, they wouldn't have diabetes.
Right.
But that's not the case at all.
I agree.
Yeah, we need to look at these people with a lot of empathy and give them a lot of support, because, like I said earlier, it's an everyday thing, and it's not something you can most of the time change far as the fact that you're diagnosed.
Right, especially if it's your genetics, like you said, or age.
Yes.
Next thing that people say is you can always tell if you have diabetes.
Okay, so not at all in the beginning. As we kind of alluded to earlier, I may not have symptoms for months to years. I could be in that pre-diabetes phase for years, mm-hmm. and it just is so gradually climbing that it is not causing me to have symptoms until I've actually got damage to my nerves, damage to my blood vessels, mm-hmm. and complications that are occurring. So you do want to get screened because you won't always know. And just because you don't feel bad doesn't mean your sugar isn't high and isn't damaging your body in some way. So,
yeah, very good. Last one then. Once you have diabetes, Kim, there's nothing you can do about it.
Okay, so that is one that I used to hear a lot at the Diabetes Education Center. But I think after talking about it, people are very surprised. Some people feel like it's almost a death sentence as far as I can't eat anything.
Yeah.
My whole life has to be changed and turned upside down because
yes.
of this diabetes.
Yes.
But what we truly find is small changes make a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if we listen to our healthcare providers, if we go to our visits, if we enlist our family and friends to support us, we can make small changes. We do not have to starve.
Yeah.
We do not have to cut out all carbs
right.
from our diet.
Yep.
But we just need to eat all things in moderation and exercise some. We do not have to kill ourselves. 150 minutes a week, moderate intensity mm-hmm. exercise goes a long way. So there's absolutely many things. I've seen so many people, both with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, get their A1C back into the actual normal range
yes.
or at least below 7
yeah. Yeah.
To live a safer, healthier life. So it can be done.
It can. And I, you know, weight too, I was thinking of when you were saying the little changes. One thing that I like to tell patients, which you probably tell them at the education center, along with the small changes is, you know, I tell them 10% weight loss.
Yes.
Don't think I got to lose 50 pounds or 100 pounds or 10%. If mm-hmm. you're, you know,
yes.
it makes a huge difference. And I think if you tell people in the small, like you were doing, in the small pieces, you know, small changes.
It really goes a long way.
It
yes.
does. It
and
does.
So that weight loss, so for instance, I weigh 200 pounds, I go down to 180.
Yeah.
That may not sound like my dream goal.
Right.
But that actually makes me more sensitive to the insulin.
Yes.
And it makes my blood sugar lower.
Yeah.
It decreases my insulin resistance and helps me very much. So that may be as low as I have to go to get my A1C back into the normal range.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that.
Yeah.
Because people do think, oh, there's nothing I can do. So
yep.
that was very helpful. Thank you for that clarification.
So we've talked a little bit already about risk factors, Kim, for diabetes. And you've talked about lifestyle choices a little bit. And you've mentioned small, realistic steps, especially when we're talking about diet and exercise. So can you tell the listeners maybe just a few of those for diet and exercise, you know, that maybe they can help prevent? And you did mention the word carbs. So when you talk about diet, will you clarify a little bit about carbs?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we talked about controllable risk factors and non-controllable risk factors. So I think we're clear on that or pretty good. For type 2 diabetes. So things that we can control and lifestyle changes that we can make, diet, exercise, stress management are three of the biggies
mm-hmm.
That we can make changes in. So I talked about exercise 150 minutes a week. If I've not been doing it, that may seem like an insurmountable goal. But just start out slow and easy, you know, 5 minutes. Do that for a week or two. Go up to 10 minutes, you know, each time that you walk. Work your way up to that minimum of 150 minutes per week, moderate intensity. It means my heart's beating a little faster than it normally would be. I can tell that I'm doing something, mm-hmm. but I'm not in pain. I'm not pulling muscles, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
And especially as we get older, adding a little bit of weight training into that 150 minutes to build up muscle. The more muscle I have, the more efficiently I burn sugar. So that's going to go a long way to reducing insulin resistance and making me use that sugar more effectively. So do a little, not heavy lifting, just a little bit of weight training, though, in that. Stress management. I can't tell you enough. If you were wearing a glucose sensor and something really stressful happened to you, you would immediately, without eating any food, begin to watch your sugar climb, because any sort of stress, mental, emotional, physical, is going to make your liver release sugar into your bloodstream because of the effect of the hormones. So anything you can do, I know we can't possibly live in a stress-free right. world or environment, but purposefully throughout the day, taking some deep breaths, listening to some jokes and having a belly laugh, you know, venting to a friend about things that are going on in your life, going to an actual exercise class, or doing some kind of meditation. And it doesn't have to be you can find lots of meditation videos, like online, yeah. like on YouTube, and they're not weird and they're not funky. They're just walking you through, taking the deep breaths, letting them out, you know, progressively relaxing your muscles, that kind of thing. So doing something on purpose every day, if you can, for stress management, and then doing your exercise. Really like to see people never go more than one day without exercising. Like, it's okay to do it every other day, but try not to go 2 days in a row without right, exercising, yeah. Yeah. especially if you have diabetes.
Yeah.
And then the other one that we mentioned was diet. And so when we think about diet, people think about sugar. So we have in our diet protein, meat, chicken, beef. We have beans and things like that have protein in them. We have fats, mm-hmm. which are going to be like the fat on the side of a piece of meat, mm-hmm. butter. Mm-hmm. Avocado is a healthy fat, you know. So fats we want a small amount of, not a lot of, because we don't want to raise our cholesterol. But the one that raises our sugar the most are the carbohydrates. So these are some of the fruits and vegetables, and so potatoes, corn, breads, and sweets, obviously. So it's not that we can't have the potato or the bread or whatever that is, but we need to control how much of that we have. We want to always eat our protein. Always eat our non-starchy vegetables, like our salad, our green beans, tomatoes, okra, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. green leafy vegetables, mm-hmm. spinach. But we want to have maybe 2 servings of carbs on our plate if we're a female, maybe 3 if we're a male. Okay. So, for instance, I might have a 4-ounce steak, some salad, green beans. I can even have another non-starchy if I want to. Half my plate needs to be non-starchy. And then I could have 1 roll and 1 half-cup serving of potatoes.
Okay.
So there are people that think, oh, I can't ever eat a potato again.
Yeah, right.
Just simply not true. So carbs turn to sugar in the bloodstream, and that is why people think they can't eat bread and potatoes. But it just has to be eaten in the right amount. So,
okay. Well, yeah. Thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Welcome back to Local Matters, Health Matters. Today we are with Kim Mayberry from Cookeville Regional Medical Center. We're going to continue our conversation about American Diabetes Month.
Kim, let's talk about the work happening right here in our community in the Upper Cumberland. What types of programs, education classes, treatment options does CRMC offer for individuals living with diabetes or prediabetes?
Yeah, so obviously we have our CRMG endocrinology office, which is where we have 2 amazing endocrinologists, Dr. Pettenpolli and Dr. Valapu. And over there in their office, we have not only their medical expertise, but we have Jennifer Smith. She's a registered dietitian over there. She's a certified diabetes care and education specialist. And she teaches diet, also, though, helps people manage their insulin pumps and their continuous glucose monitors. And then we also have Russell Christensen over there. He's a pharmacist. He He's a clinical pharmacist.
Nice. Okay.
And he helps manage that as well. Of course, over in the hospital, we have many protocols and procedures for managing people that come into the hospital with diabetes. We also, a Vanderbilt pediatric endocrinology, our endocrinologist comes to the endocrinology office. I think it's once a month, but you can also be a pediatric client and still get care in Cookeville.
Okay, good.
By coordinating through Vanderbilt at that office.
So. I was going to ask, how did people get referred into that? So your primary care provider refers you in for the education with Jennifer?
Yes.
That's
how it used to be.
Okay.
At this point, to my knowledge, you would be referred to the endocrinologist.
I got you.
And then you get the services of Jennifer, the dietitian, and the
pharmacist. Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I think that's how it works right now.
Very nice. No, that's great, because people usually want to know, can I refer myself, or can... And it would depend on their insurance, but, you know, how do you get involved with that team?
Yeah, I think they like for you to have a nurse practitioner or provider, physician, somebody refer you over there.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Very good. So what kind of support systems or resources are local for families? You know, you talked about the patients getting care. What about families having a deal?
So the thing about that is we always also have the family – caregiver, friend, whoever it is, come along with the person. In fact, I know you probably remember Dr. Tokarek. Mm-hmm. I think he's retired now.
Mm-hmm.
But he used to continuously remind people, even if they were not that old, to always bring someone with them, mm-hmm. to hear what's being said and to help support them.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because,
you're
by yourself and you're trying to take in all this information and –
Yes.
You just forget things. It is good to have another pair of ears and eyes.
Yes. He was very encouraging of, mm-hmm. so A, bring someone with you to your visits, whether it's your provider visit or whether it's your education visit. And then we have the type 1 support group through the Cookeville Regional Foundation that's available. They have an event coming up pretty soon, actually, but they have almost a monthly event. And again, if you just email the foundation at crmchealth.org or call 783, I think it's 2003, you can get in touch with them and you can get the full schedule. And this is a great resource, especially for families with children who are trying to manage their diabetes and you feel so alone and it can be scary and overwhelming. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
so this support group's very important. And again, bring the whole family, bring the friends, bring whoever is going to be helping you manage your diabetes and let them learn along with you. So,
great advice.
Yeah, and I think, too, when you do have the children, the pediatrics, it is a life-changing event, and you want everybody in the family to know about the disease and, you know, changes that they're going to be making as well. So something they can do together.
Safety is a big issue, especially with type 1 or with type 2 if you're taking insulin.
Yeah.
So we need everybody on board so that we can stay safe.
That's right. So technology is changing healthcare very quickly in great ways. But how has new technology, like the continuous glucose monitors you've mentioned or the insulin pumps, provided diabetes management and patient outcomes?
So two things I've seen with that. One is how much better the quality of life of a person with diabetes can be.
Yeah.
Because now I don't have to pack all this stuff with me and poke my finger 4 to 6 times a day in order to figure out how much insulin I need and then figure out where I'm going to go when I'm in the restaurant or in my class at school to inject myself.
Yeah.
I can wear a continuous glucose monitor. It can be connected to my phone. It can be connected to a receiver, which can also be connected to my continuous insulin pump if that's what I'm wearing. I can have a glucose monitor with or without that. And now the recommendations are, even if you have type 2 and you're not taking insulin, a continuous glucose monitor is a really good idea, because when I eat the food, in about 30 minutes, my blood sugar starts to rise. Within about 2 hours, it peaks out, and then it starts to come back down. So I can literally, in real time, eat or drink something, watch what happens to my blood sugar, and know, A, I don't need to eat that thing or drink that thing. Or maybe I just need to have a little less of it.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe I could combine that carb with a little bit of protein and slow down that digestion just a little bit. So literally, people can self-educate by self-monitoring. True. And you as a provider, I'm sure the struggle is real. You've asked people to bring in blood sugar records.
Mm-hmm.
That is a hard thing for people to do.
Absolutely.
But when I have a continuous glucose monitor or a pump or both, you download my device, you see my data for the last 2 weeks or a month or 3 months even, you have an average estimated A1C to share and discuss, and you can literally go down to hours of the day and say, you do well here in the early hours of the day, but later in the evening, you're struggling a little bit more.
Yeah.
Tell me more about what you're doing at this time of day. And you can work on that.
Yes.
Yeah. So
awesome technology.
Yes. So it has changed the life. It is made people with diabetes more healthy because they can manage. And it's made the life of the patient better and the life of the provider better because you actually have the tools you need to help the person.
And it's accurate, you know, because a lot of times it was based on, you know, how many times and what time of the day they were poking and checking and writing it down. And that might have been not at 2 hours after they've eaten or even fasting.
Right.
So, yeah, much more accurate data.
Yes.
And it's easy.
Great point. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Because, that was my struggle back in the day doing internal medicine when I first, you know, was a provider. It very hard to manage someone if you don't know.
Yeah. We what say no data, no decision, you can't. Yeah. It's hard.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And then you didn't want those low sugars, like you were saying. You wanted to be safe.
Absolutely.
And that would probably prevent that. Tell me about any kind of you're with Cookeville Regional. Are there any kind of ways that you guys at the hospital screen people? Because we're talking about getting screened and knowing your numbers and
Yes. So the main thing we offer are those quarterly health fairs or wellness fairs.
Okay.
Where that is definitely one piece of what we – there's many things that are offered during those fairs. But one thing that we always do if people select that is to run some labs, and one of those is their fasting glucose. And then if we're given permission, we'll share that with their provider, and that way they can go on to them and have a discussion if it comes out of range. So that's the main thing.
And it's much more economical, I believe, because you guys do it like bundles on certain blood draws. And so the patient can actually maybe save a little money by getting it done with these wellness fairs.
Yes, they save a lot of money.
Nice.
You don't have to be insured.
Nice.
You can be a self-pay, and the cost is minimal, very minimal. There's a lot of things you can get done, but blood sugar is definitely one.
Okay. Kim, thank you so much for joining us today and for the incredible work you and your team at Cookeville Regional Medical Center are doing to support diabetes awareness and education.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Any last messages of hope or encouragement?
Well, I'd just like to say that what we've been sharing this whole time is the fact that you do not have to have a single complication related to diabetes. You can manage diabetes well. You can live. I know people that have received an award for managing type 1 diabetes for 50 years or longer.
Wow.
And no complications or minimal complications, you know. So just know that you can do it, and you can do all the things you love. You can play sports. You can go skiing. You can do whatever you want to do and live with diabetes. So
yes. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you, guys.